Okay, this is Jerry with the worst comic podcast ever. We are at the first Lebanon MegaCon. It's been an eventful morning, and we are here in the panel room with John Dugan from, you're going to know him as the role of grandfather. I see it grandpa. Either way, grandpa, from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original. And you've been in some of the later days sequel or spinoff movies.
Yes, I played Grandpa in the original, and the most recent one, Chainsaw 3D, I played Grandpa again 38 years later. And then in the fourth one, which goes under several names, The Next Generation, I think Return of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of the titles. Of. I used to always call it... Leatherface meet Abbott and Costello meet Leatherface. that's the one with Renee Zellweger is another way to say it.
Yeah.
The one with Renee and Matthew McConaughey.
Okay.
And I play a cop in that one. So I've done three. I've done more of the franchise than any other of the actors. Some people have done two. I've done three.
How did you get attached to the project in the first place?
Well, the truthful short story is my brother-in-law wrote it.
Okay.
My sister was married to Kim Henkel at the time. And I was a young actor in Chicago. He was a writer, and he wrote this film. He called me. I was doing a children's play, Terry Little Tales, at the Goodman Theater in Chicago for the summer, two shows a day, 6 days a week for $175, I think. So it's like $12.50 a show or something like that. But it was my first, you know, professional acting gig. And he called and told me he'd written this film. He said, "Hey, man, are you crazy?" You know, this was the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Yeah, man, I'm crazy." And why? And he told me what he had in mind. And so I went and put my notice in at the theater and headed out to Texas. So the first half of the summer, I was dancing around in tights, entertaining children and singing songs from around the world. And the second half of the summer, I was hitting a girl over the head with a sledgehammer. I got paid for both jobs. So.
Quite the diverse resume for that year. That the movie obviously was filmed down in Texas. I understand it was brutally hot that summer.
It was very hot. The heat was like another character in the film, really. It was unbearably hot. And with all the makeup and the costume and everything. And, you know, my scenes were all inside that house with the windows all closed and blacked out. And, you know, we had no ventilation. There was a box fan, like a 100-year-old box fan, like in the corner. That they would turn on between. It did absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And we had an old Winnebago kind of thing, an old RV that we used as costume and makeup trailer, and it had a kind of an air conditioner in it. But there was only, because all the costumes and everything, there was only room for like two people to sit down. But I would, if it was going to be a long time, I could go in there and try to cool off. But it didn't help with all the makeup.
Yeah.
It just
and my, from the reading that I did online, you know, the movie was under a pretty tight budget, you know, trying to make it for as cheap as possible. And, you know, you all each only had one costume.
I mean,
so you couldn't swap out costumes between takes. You had to wear that same costume all day long. And they talked about Gunner having to wear that mask that whole time. And
yeah, Gunner could take his mask off, but only if the break was going to be more than a half an hour long or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he'd take it off like at lunchtime.
Yeah.
Mine was glued down with spirit gum. Mine was plastic makeup, was liquid latex. And it was attached. It was in sections, and all glued down with spirit gum. It was horrifying. They don't use that method anymore. I might have been one of the last people. The industry was switching over to foam latex at that time, which is more comfortable, and it gives you a lot more movement. And now it's silicone, which is great. That's like a second skin. It's still uncomfortable.
Sure. Did you all realize what you were making at that point? I mean, that type of movie was completely unheard of in that.
Oh, we knew the type of movie we were making. Yeah. I was anticipating the question being, did you have any idea it was going to be as huge as it was?
Well, and that follows into it. I mean, they say that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of introduced the gore level to a new level, and using power tools as a weapon.
It kind of introduced. I think a chainsaw had been used once before, and I'm not sure about that. But I was thinking either Last House on the Left or one of those films. But and we didn't take gore to a new level. There's no gore in it. People swear that it's a bloody slasher. It's not. I've argued with people. I have to say, buddy, I was there. You know, you know, when they tell me that you see the hook when you see the hook going in Terry's character, what's Pam? When you see the hook go, the meat hook go on Pam's back, you don't see the meat hook go on Pam's back. You see her reaction to the meat hook, but you never see it. You see the meat hook, you see her back.
Yeah.
You see her from the front drop down. And you see her kind of come up short, and then you see her, you know, mm-hmm. her reaction to it. So the gore is all in your own sick mind, is what I tell people. People mm-hmm. kind of get ticked off sometimes when you tell them that. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, pal, it's your own sick fucking mind.
But even at that, there was a lot of theaters that refused to show it.
Oh, or my God, there were communities
that banned it. And
England,
countries.
Germany, you know. They've only been able to see the film for the last few years in some European countries, mm-hmm. so it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Because it is all subliminal, mm-hmm. mostly. There's some backsplash, you know. You see some kind of blood flying when Franklin gets killed, but people will say you see him cut in half. You see the blade going into when they see the. You don't see that. It's shot from behind mm-hmm. in silhouette. You see him from behind going, you know, and you see the silhouette of Leatherface and the silhouette of Saw, and then you see some blood splatter on Leatherface, you know, some splashback. But you don't see guts, no, you know, you don't see that stuff. So Marilyn gets pretty bloody,
yeah.
Sally, you know, by the end she's just completely, we must have used just a whole bucket. And dumped it over her head.
What were they using back then? Corn
it was,
syrup.
It was Karo syrup and red food coloring or chocolate a mixture of chocolate, depending on if they want arterial blood or venous blood. You know,
mm-hmm.
change the color a little bit.
Sure.
But yeah, that stuff's awful. Draws ants, sticky, terrible. I did a film called The Hospital about 6 years ago. Which I don't know if any of you all have seen it. Either of you guys have seen it. But I ended up with a fair amount of blood after I get killed and that. And I got dressed. We were shooting in an old deserted hospital. We actually, mm-hmm. my room where I stayed was a hospital room. And there was one room with a functioning shower, which was across the hall, which kind of dribbled lukewarm water. Tepid water, and I had this syrup drying all over me. It was all down the insides of my legs and everything. And I finally got all cleaned up, but I had left the socks that I was wearing, I left on the floor in that room. I woke up the next morning, and there was a trail of ants through a crack in the window, down the wall, across the floor, and there was the socks and the underwear that I'd been wearing were covered. You couldn't even see them. They were covered with ants, yeah. So I ended up losing a pair of socks and a pair of underwear, a pair of boxer shorts out of the deal. But what was I talking? Oh, stage blood. Yeah, stage blood was terrible. It's just awful. And she was at Marilyn by the end. You know, when she gets into that pickup truck, the very last shot of Marilyn, mm-hmm. she is completely, you see no flesh. It's all blood from here down. Ugh. Poor thing. We put her through hell. Just what a trooper.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable actress.
Yeah.
And a good friend.
What was it like working with Toby, the director, Toby Hooper?
Yeah, he seemed to know what he was doing. My experience is, and you can ask every actor and you're going to get a different answer, mm-hmm. probably, but Toby really was sort of he was head-to-head with the cinematographer and the gaffer and making sure that the lighting and the shot, he was more like the visual director, and Kim Henkel, and they actually got co-directing credit on it. Mm-hmm. And co-producing and co-writing credit. Kim Henkel, who did most of the writing, was kind of the one who gave actors notes and ideas and things like that. And he was constantly writing while we were there. You know, so he just had a pencil and a legal pad and was constantly, and he'd just be writing during a scene, and then before we'd reshoot, you know, or change a setup, and hit it from another angle, he'd tear off a sheet of paper and hand it to somebody and say, try this time, you know. And so that was going on all the time.
Flying by the seat of your pants.
Yeah, it makes it a bitch in the editing room, too, to mm-hmm. try to cut all that stuff together. Yeah. But Toby, he wanted everything covered. It took us 27 hours to shoot that scene in the dinner party. And part of it was because Toby, the way that you generally do something like that is you do a master, or maybe two masters, a master mm-hmm. from one side and a master from the other side.
Sure.
And you're on through the whole scene. Then when you start getting down into two shots and close-ups, you just do a portion mm-hmm. of it. You know, just a couple of lines and yeah. close-up, this and that. We got around to doing close-ups. We do the whole scene from one person's close-up again, from top to bottom. And then you do his close-up, whole scene, top to bottom, yeah. with a different lighting setup, different, you know. So it's tedious, but it's a beautiful scene, and it shows that he put a lot of, you know, that we put a lot of work into mm-hmm. it. And the attention that you could, it really comes through. You know, we were all fried, you know, burnt out, pissed off, uncomfortable. It's like, yeah, let's just kill her and go home. You know, let's just kill her. You know, and Gunner talks about that. He had talked about it when he was alive. Mm-hmm. And he probably mentioned something about it in his book. But there's this one point where you've been at it all night long and the sun's starting to come up and you're still going and you're tired. Where he actually thought to himself, yeah, let's just kill her. Mm-hmm. Then he realized, what the hell? You know, it all went on in his head. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, damn, Grandpa, come on, just kill her, you know. Yeah. Just go home.
Once the movie came out, did people recognize you or?
No, you had to be a super fan to get recognized. No. No, I was never recognized. Now I am.
Sure.
But then, no, nobody knew what I looked like. No, I was never recognized until years and years and years later, okay. like 10 years ago, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, and looking at your IMDb page, it looked like you did the movie and then...
I did nothing for years.
And then you got back in with the Next Generation or, uh-huh. as we mentioned, the Renee Zellweger.
Then I started doing some stuff. But I took a lot of time off and... Mm-hmm. was a husband and a father and a bartender and a waiter and a shoe salesman and a truck driver.
Sounds like fun.
I had a cousin that got in touch with me a few years ago, and her daughter, granddaughter, was interested in acting. And do I have any advice for her? I said, yeah, I learned how to wash dishes, tend bar, wait tables, sell shoes, deliver freight. I started thinking of all the stuff that I had done, you know, just to make mm-hmm. a living in my life. So, and then you find out that your job as an actor, and this is something I learned years ago. As a matter of fact, Eli Wallach mm-hmm. said this to my class. He came and talked to my class in theater school. And we were, it was the final year, we were all seniors, and we were fixing to get out in the professional world. And he said, you're going to find out as professional actors. First he asked, what is your job as an actor? And people say, well, to get as deep into my character as I want, or do this, do that, to understand every aspect of the play or the film that you're in. And he said, no, you're going to find that your job as an actor, 90% of your job is looking for work every day. And everybody's like, huh? But it's, yeah, you know, true. He said even, and he was a very, well, this was in the 70s, he was a very well-established mm-hmm. actor at this point, had been for years, you know, for 30 years. And he said when he rapped on a film, after about a week of relaxing, taking some time off, he'd start getting like, am I ever going to work again? Yeah. You know, why isn't anybody calling me? I got to get another job going. From all those years as a young actor, beating the streets in New York, you know, in the mm-hmm. theater, you know,
yeah,
just trying to get auditions, and all the years in Hollywood trying to get work. You know, so that's is essentially what your job is. And if you're not cut out for that, so I took a long, long, long time and didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And now I'm doing it again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you appreciate these films, or is it just a job?
Some of them I appreciate. Some of them it's just a job. You know, I'll admit it. I've done stuff just for the money.
Sure.
You know, stuff's like this is. I did turn down actually a job just a couple months ago. And it wasn't because I actually liked the script, but they weren't offering me enough money.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing I found out. It's until you start asking for money that you don't make any money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you work for free, that's all people will ever ask you to do. So yeah, it was hard to turn it down, but we couldn't come to, and we were that close. We weren't even that far. Mm-hmm. But at that point, it became the principal of the thing.
Sure.
And it's like, come on, it's just a wee bit more I'm asking for. You can't come up with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't budge, and they wouldn't budge, so.
Yeah. They'll find someone at that price, and
yeah,
you've got your price. And that, I fully support that. I mean, we see that a lot, you know. I focus a little bit more on the comic book mm-hmm. and that type of industry. And, you know, we see all these people that they expect an artist to draw a comic for free or draw a print, yes, for free, and that's taken up their time that they could be doing other paying jobs. That's taken up their materials that they've already paid for. You know, there should be some compensation. I mean, you can't expect an artist to do charity work all the time, or else they're going to become a charity themselves. So
yeah,
but okay. Do either of you have questions?
What do you do?
I actually work for a TV station here in town. They're down in Springfield, and I'm running camera, and I actually just got promoted to be a director for the TV station. So.
Cool.
Congrats.
I've never done, I've done some, I did lighting and electrical, you know, for training films and I did some broadcast commercial stuff, you know, in Chicago. And I was just telling this story to Mike Kosky. Mm-hmm. I came in, we had pre-lit a set for, I think it was a teleconference or something. And I came in the next day to for the shoot, and they were short a camera operator, and I got to use a big, gigantic Ikigami broadcast camera mm-hmm. on a pod thing, you know. Put the headset on. I was like, Dugan, you're on camera three. I was total panic. But no! He goes, no, just hold on to the thing. Debbie will tell you what to do in your ear. You know? And actually, at one point, I was like looking around. I'd like let go of the, and it wasn't completely balanced. Uh-huh. And it, you know, the camera started slowly tipping. I'm getting this Dugan in my ear. Dugan, I'm doing it. Just totally distracted. Yeah. Dugan, what? You're... You I never was asked to do it again after that.
But it's those jobs like that that help make you a better actor.
Yeah, I did that. I did that for years. Good money. What freelancers in Chicago back then? I was making. This was in the '80s. I was making $22.50 an hour, based on a 10-hour day, and then after, and sometimes you'd work an 18-hour day, you know. And so we got straight time to 10, time and a half to 14, double time to 18. Anything after 18 was triple time. And I did a Pontiac commercial, my biggest one-day paycheck up to Chainsaw 3D. Mm-hmm. was for a Pontiac commercial that ran like 22 hours. And at a point, you don't even want to go home anymore. Mm-hmm. Triple time?
Yeah. Let's do another take.
Yeah.
So, what projects have you done recently or do you have coming up soon?
Gosh, where's my cheat sheet? Okay, I got in the can, but not released yet. I have Deviant Behavior. Mm-hmm. Which is a horror film about a psycho serial killer. Takes place, I shot in Corpus Christi. Got to go back to Texas and shoot again. And I play a kind of an old homicide detective and a partner up with an old washed up ex-cop who's now an alcoholic gumshoe, you know, private detective kind of guy. Mm-hmm. To get this guy. And it's a really... was a lot of fun. It's a neat film. Looking forward to that coming out in, and it won't be out till the fall. They just wrapped maybe a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Devil's Ink, which is a psychological thriller that we shot in Michigan, and that is in almost, they're looking for a July release on that. And I play the asshole mayor of this town who's the father of a asshole kid who accidentally kills a couple people. And it's hard to explain. But
sure.
It's a really nice piece written and co-written and co-directed by a couple of really talented young guys. I just talked to him on the phone last night. So I might be doing another project with them. So that's... Then... I voiced one of the main characters for a stop-motion war movie that stop-motion using little army men and little tanks, mm-hmm. and stuff. Played Colonel Tadaska. The name of the film is The Devil Dogs of Kilo Company, and that will be released sometime in the fall. Belly Timber. Which is, it just wrapped, and it'll be some, probably fall before it's released too. And it's a film about supposedly true life, based on a true life thing of cannibals in the Midwest back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, or something like that. Or like Irish or Scottish immigrants or something. But I did the wraparound, I played Grandpa. So I started telling my grandchildren the story, you know, a long time ago, not far from here, you know, the kids are like this. And then the movie, mm-hmm. and then it's me in the end, they're going, oh, Grandpa, you know, that's not true. Well, you never know, that sort of thing.
I noticed you had a lot of characters with the name of Grandpa attached on your...
Well, I did almost the exact same thing as, what was it, In the Pines. Which was it's been in release for a while now, short film. But I played the same thing. And it was based on an old legend from the Tennessee Hills of these two sisters that are ghosts. And I'm the grandpa with my grandchildren. A long time ago, not far from here, you know. And then the end is, oh, Grandpa, that's not true, is it? You never know. If you look out that window right now. You know? And so I've done two almost identical.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm sure I'm forgetting something. Oh, and then not shot yet. I have Rock Paper Dead, which is a film written by Vic Miller, who wrote Friday the 13th, the original Friday the 13th. get to work with him, and that's I'm playing a sadistic psychologist at a mental institution, which houses a serial killer who, you know, they decide he's cured and he's released into the world again. And, of course, in a few days, goes back to his wicked ways. A film called William Frost, which is another serial killer thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm sensing a pattern.
I'm playing a sheriff. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those things, I got one day on it. They have, it's a cast of thousands. Anybody who's ever done a horror film is in William Frost. Mm-hmm. We'll be shooting that in California next month, hopefully. We're shooting for May.
That's
shooting to shoot in May. So, mm-hmm.
Do you still do any theater work?
No.
Okay.
And theater is hard to fit in. You rehearse during the day and you perform at night. It's just, theater's tough to do. So I just got out of doing it because you either have to do it or...
Yeah. There's some people that really appreciate being able to perform before the live audience.
Oh, I love it. You know,
and some people, they have no problem acting. They just don't want to do it in front of an audience. They'd rather it be filmed.
I enjoy it. It's just kind of hard to...
It becomes a full-time commitment.
It's the commitment, the time commitment.
There's nothing, you can't do anything else when you're committed to that.
Confusing to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but now that I'm kind of pretty much retired from straight work life, you know, I just started getting Social Security last year, so I guess I could think about doing theater again. Would you drive me to rehearsal, honey? But we live way out in the country, 40 miles outside of Nashville, so.
Some pretty territory.
Yeah. Yes, we live, you know, about a couple hundred yards off the paved road.
Yeah. All right. Do you have a website or?
I'm available on Facebook. I don't have
Facebook.
A
okay.
website.
All right. Well, people can track you down on Facebook, and appreciate you taking time to talk to us today, and hope you enjoy your experience here at the lovely Lebanon MegaCon.
Yes.
And,
Mega.
All right. This is Jerry with the Worst Comic Podcast Ever. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Jerry.